Sometimes when I can't sleep, I watch the Storage Wars marathons.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. No. Yeah. This has to stop.
You can't be watching smart crap all the time.
No, you can't.
Sometimes
clearly,
you have to
you
just dumb it down.
Well, there's dumb and there's dumb. Like
90% of my cable intake is literally just garbage TV. Cops.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh, Cops is the best thing to watch.
Oh, we need to hold an intervention.
Intervention is a good one too.
No! This needs to stop.
My name is Kate, and I have a podcast.
This is the inaugural episode of my podcast, which I have lazily named Kate Has a Podcast.
It's a good name.
You know, I figured I'd stick with it. My mom told me she really thought it was a stupid idea for a name of a blog.
Yeah, and it's branding.
So I'm sure she'll also agree that it's a terrible name for a podcast, but I'm going to do it anyway because that way it makes it easier for when she's sending my blog links to her friends in chain emails, which she does so much at Thank You Mom, where she says, my daughter Kate has a blog, and then she puts it in the email, the link, and now it's kind of a funny joke that she doesn't, I don't know if she realizes that.
Well, she'll figure it out
idea.
When she listens to this now, won't she?
Hi, Mom. Anyways, she is going to be one of the three people who probably listen to this. Three people.
Yeah.
One of which is you, but you're here, so technically you're listening to it as it's happening live.
That's true, but I do listen back to things that I've appeared on and to my own work. Sick as that sounds.
I just have this image of you sitting in your house going, yeah, that was funny.
Something like that.
Patting yourself on the back. No, I do it too. I sometimes go back and read my old tweets.
I think it's important sometimes. Like, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't, like, lose hours to it. But once in a while, you need to reassess and see, okay, what worked, what didn't, and, you know, the same sort of thing. Listening back, because I'm not so much listening for me as I am listening to the other people.
The worst feeling I have is when I'm going back in the blog, like, a year back to read something old that I've written, and then I found... And when I find a spelling mistake or a typo, and then
happens.
I'm like, oh my god, fix it! Yeah. And then once I fixed it, and the blog accidentally posted that as a new post, so then this really old post went to the front of the page, and everybody knew that I was looking at my old work and editing it retroactively,
yeah.
As if anyone is still going to be reading it. But
yeah, yeah. Just you.
Although, there's a weird thing that happens on the blog. Anything I write about Jennifer Lawrence, obviously... Or, strangely enough, Chris Evans.
Really?
From Captain America.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any of those two, those get the most hits.
Okay.
And my article about how much I hated The Hobbit.
Okay.
Because people... And then... Yeah, but nobody's gotten mad at me about that before yet.
See, I get it. Like just about every other blogger out there, I get a huge amount of hits from the photos I've posted.
Yeah.
None of... Like, most of which are not the ones that are my own... as so much as they are like pictures of famous people or specific things in movies.
I always like to look at the all-time greatest hits of what people were searching for when
find
my blog.
Yeah.
And I like to share those with people sometimes because I find that it kind
Chris
of
Evans
ridiculous.
Is pretty high on that
Chris
list.
Evans,
look at that.
Chris Evans is the number one most searched way that people find my blog. The second one is CSI Miami Meme.
Wow.
Which is from a long time ago, but I actually made fun of CSI Miami in some post, and I had a meme with, like,
wow.
The Horatio and the sunglasses.
That's pretty impressive.
Then Bella Pregnant. They just want to see pictures of Bella from Twilight Pregnant. Justin Bieber, obviously. Jennifer Lawrence. And it's not Jennifer Lawrence they're searching for, but I say every week it's always Jennifer Lawrence cellulite.
Yeah, it's almost never, hey, I'm looking for an article about this.
I know, it's so weird, but the one thing that I do like that I've noticed more lately is, for some reason, people actually are looking for Kate Has a Blog.
That
makes me happy because it's people are actually searching specifically for me and finding me,
Yeah, when people search out, like, my name and the site, or people just, like, look for my name and Toronto, I know that they're looking for me.
And then you think,
or I think, who's this?
My friend Callie told me once, which was one of the greatest things I've ever been told, that really was, like, a moment where I was feeling very proud of myself. She was in a lecture in college, and she was sitting in lecture, and she was snooping like everyone does. I'm looking at what other people were looking at on their laptops in front of her.
Okay.
And she texted me and said, I am in class, and somebody is reading your blog.
Hey.
Right in front of me, and they don't know that I know you, and they don't know you, but they're reading your blog right in front of me. And I went, oh my God. Anyways, I'm here with Ryan McNeil.
Hi. Now that you've heard me talk for 5 minutes, nice to meet y'all.
Ryan was nice enough to have me on his podcast, the Matinee Cast, twice, which was so much fun. And it was so much fun, in fact, that I decided I want to do my own podcast. And who else to be my first guest but Ryan, who has helped me and even brought me a nice microphone today.
Yes, which, you know, you can feel free to borrow it. It's caused me all kinds of headaches through the years of when it works and when it doesn't. But as long as you have a brain in your head, unlike me, it tends to work out a bit better.
That's good. And so I asked Ryan, I'm going to have him give us a little idea of who he is. And you can find out more about who he is and what kind of movies he likes and what kind of a writer he is on his blog, which is thematinee.ca.
That's it.
And you can listen to his podcast, which is The Matinee Cast.
Yeah.
And, but I decided I was going to ask you some strange questions.
Yeah, it's, you know, cribbing nicely from my own style, so it's really a dose of my own medicine. I like it.
Yeah, you asked me really strange questions when I came on your podcast.
Yes.
And I liked it, though, because people always ask the same kind of questions, and the worst one to ask a film lover or critic or anyone is what your favorite movie is.
See, I disagree.
You disagree?
I got into this on Twitter a month or two ago, and I said, you always have a favorite movie. I don't care. Like, I'm not saying you only have to choose one and watch it for the rest of time, and I'm not saying it will always be your favorite movie. But at one given moment, I should be able to ask you, what's your favorite film? And with very little thought, you should be able to have an answer.
Because I have favorite movies of the moment.
That's fine.
And then I have ones that I always come back to.
Also fine.
And I have sort of, mine I sort of categorize them.
Yeah.
Like I can have my favorite foreign movie, my favorite documentary, my favorite Canadian film.
Yeah, yeah. But that's all like sub, you know, all sub questions. But it is one of those things I'm more personally interested in than I want to necessarily like broadcast it to, you know, 4 or 5 dozen people who listen to my show. But like, you know, if I was meeting somebody for the first time, that might be the kind of thing I ask them. But as far as like how a person relates to film, those kind of questions are how I've come to shape what I talk about on the show, because I think that they tell me something more about the person than just what their favorite movie is. Because I think that that's a more personal relationship, and B, that relationship changes through time. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, I wrote a while ago about the sequence of my favorite films since I've started watching films. I think there've been five
favorite movies
that have been okay. That was my favorite film, and then I turned 13, and then that became my favorite film,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so
mm-hmm.
on and so on. And it's been the same one for like 14 years now.
What is it now? I'm curious. I wasn't
going
to ask you.
I think we've had this conversation. It's Almost Famous.
Almost Famous.
Right now, but it's
that's
like,
a good choice.
Like, you know, I could talk for hours about Almost Famous, but I don't really think that tells anybody about me.
No.
Which is the questions that you're asking me, and the questions that I ask my guests. I think that tells the listener more about the guest. So that to me
is
more interesting.
I like to know about people's like secret movie watching behavior, and I don't mean of the adult variety. I mean that's why I asked you. The first question I wanted to know was, what was a bad movie that you secretly love? Because everybody has at least one. I have several.
Yeah, and it's probably a good question for me, because I get accused of being elitist a lot. I mean, a lot. You know, where if something... which is weird, because I also get accused of being an apologist. But to your question, I had to think about movies that I've liked for a long time. And movies that if I was flipping channels or if I was flipping Netflix, I might find myself losing at least an hour to watching. There was two that came to mind, and both of them are old, one older than the other. The first one, people might say, no, that's not a bad movie, but yes it is Empire Records.
Never seen it.
Okay, so it's a crappy comedy from about 94, 95, in that little area of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's all set on one day in this record store in a small town, and the most famous people in the cast are Liv Tyler, Renee Zellweger. Neither one of them was very big at that time. Liv Tyler at that time was still the girl in the Aerosmith videos. And Renee Zellweger was nobody, really, yet. Who else is big that's in that movie? Oh, Anthony LaPaglia is in the movie. He manages the record store. And Rory Cochran, who you might know as the lead stoner in Dazed and Confused. He was on CSI Miami for a while. You recognize him to see him. So it's all set in this record store, and
I've heard of it.
Yes, and it's called. So they're having an in-store signing of this crappy adult contemporary musician named Rex Manning. So you'll hear over and over through the course of this movie, it's Rex Manning Day, and they keep saying, "Not on Rex Manning Day," and it's just about the lives of the store is about to be sold to a big. A chain of record store franchises back when there was a chain of record store franchises. You know, it's very much a snapshot of 1995.
That's good.
The writing is bad.
Right.
The acting is bad. The music is tremendously awesome.
Right.
And the story is just so insanely dumb. I think it played in theaters for about a week. Like, I think if you were to IMDb, its box office, it made maybe $100,000. Maybe. I never actually saw it in a theater. Like, I remember seeing a trailer for it, but then just never seeing it. It was one that I watched on video over and over and over. Like, and to this day, I can quote you all kinds of lines.
So you've seen it. That's the thing.
I've seen it far too often.
Okay, what's the other one that you...
So the other one is worse, because I think you'll get defenders of Empire Records, especially among people my age.
Mm-hmm.
You will not get defenders of this movie. When I was younger, when I was like 12 and 13, and certainly into my teenage years, I wanted to be Tom Cruise. I really wanted, you know...
I think you're probably not alone in that.
No, but that is probably true. You can kind of tell where a generational line is with their relationship with Tom Cruise, right? So I wanted to be Tom Cruise, and I loved his movie. He was my favorite actor in a country mile for a long, long, long time.
He is, honestly, he gets a lot of crap because of his kind of crazy personal life, but Tom Cruise... You know, he's an icon. He does have some really great roles, too.
Well, yes, he does and he doesn't, because for the longest time, he was just playing Tom Cruise, right? Like, if you every once in a while, he would do something different. Like, he would do Born on the 4th of July, or he would do The Vampire, or he would do an Interview with the Vampire,
mm-hmm,
or
yeah.
Then later on, he did Magnolia. But he's generally playing the cocky... know-it-all.
He's playing Top Gun Tom Cruise.
Exactly. Over and over and over. And even before that, he was always playing Maverick in some capacity.
I think I know which movie you're going to name.
Well, I'm going to name Days of Thunder. Okay? Because that was like right around the time I got into wanting to be Tom Cruise. I would have been 12 when that movie dropped.
Okay.
You know, and it is terrible. There is
I have not seen it.
There is no... It, you can tell... Everything that's going to happen...
I thought you were going to say Cocktail.
No. Cocktail. Well, Cocktail's neat and all, but not the same way I like Days of Thunder.
That's funny.
It's Top Gun with cars.
Yeah.
It's got Robert Duvall taking a paycheck. It's got Michael Rooker doing his Michael Rooker thing.
Michael Rooker.
Now you're interested, right?
See, now I might watch it.
Cary Elwes plays like the upstart driver who's out to like usurp Tom Cruise.
Cary Elwes.
Yes.
Okay, I gotta tell you, since I was probably however old I was when my parents showed me The Princess Bride, which was too young, probably 5 or 6,
yeah,
I've had a massive crush on Cary Elwes. I still do, even though, let's face it, Saw was
there's no way for, you know.
But then again, I still have a crush on Harrison Ford since I saw him.
He old.
Yeah, he's 70.
But he looks like the guy who's like wandering around the lobby, you know, not realizing
he's cool.
Harrison Ford's I love him, but that's because I've grown with him. If you showed him to me now, I would have been like, no. But Days of Thunder,
yeah,
it's terrible. The music in it is terrible. The whole storyline is asinine, but I love it so much.
See, that's good. And I'm going to answer these questions too because it's the first podcast. The bad movie that I secretly love, that I love way too much, is Showgirls.
Oh no.
Showgirls is such a bad movie.
There's a screening of that this week.
I know, it's at TIFF.
Are you going?
No, I've seen it like 17,000 times.
Did you see it in the theater?
Never seen it.
I think you need to. If you love it as much as you say you love it, you need to go with other people.
No, I would be greatly uncomfortable watching that in the theater with people. I don't want to pay to see that movie because it's bad, but I love it. I can quote it.
I've only seen it in pieces. I've never seen it full.
You've never seen it all the
way
through?
I have no clue how it ends. It could end with like a gigantic explosion, and I would never know.
The ending is the best part.
See, now I might go see it.
It's so terrible.
Okay.
It's the worst. So you haven't seen the great big ending?
No idea. No.
Without spoiling anything. So if I said to you...
Aliens? An explosion? Is there a car chase?
You didn't see the thing where with the hotel room?
No.
And the famous...
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. It's a really good ending.
Okay. I might just take one for the team and go see it this weekend.
You should.
Okay.
It's... one of those movies, some people actually think, and it's playing at the TIFF Bell Lightbox. Like
it's got defenders. Like a local critic wrote a book saying it's not as bad as you think. Now, I don't know if I necessarily believe that.
No, I personally don't, but I love the movie.
Because I think that comes down to intent, and I don't think Verhoeven's intent was to make something smart with that movie. He's made some really...
No, I disagree with you.
He's made some movies that on the surface look spectacularly dumb, but are actually really, really brilliant.
No,
I
disagree with you.
Starship Troopers.
I've seen some interviews with him. He actually was intending it to be...
subversive?
Yeah, it was supposed to challenge people's something.
Wow.
He has said publicly that it's his biggest like embarrassment because it was such a joke and he actually was serious. That's the thing that's the most... That to me, I love the most is that this movie takes itself seriously when it shouldn't. And especially, I don't even remember her name.
Elizabeth
Berkley. She...
Jesse Spano herself.
I always think of her as Jesse Spano. She... it's just bad. And you know what? There's some good actors in it. And that's part of the other thing that's really just troubling about it is just like... It's very... it's sexually explicit, but also kind of like you can't even take that seriously. Like it's just... the performance of Elizabeth Berkley.
You have no idea how skittish I am.
Berkley is truly awful in that movie, and I think it's a testament to the script being bad, but also that she's just doing like an over... I don't know what the direction was to her, but she didn't like on Saved by the Bell, which let's face it is one of those 80s things that's just really like one of those like cheesy 80s shows that
which
everybody
also has
loves.
A life of its own. Yeah.
But it's everybody loves it, but it's terrible. When you watch it back, you're like, oh god, that's just not good. But she's better in that show than she is in this movie.
Oh, God.
She's over the top, like, all the time.
Well, I think it's because she's trying to play... She was trying to be serious, and I don't think that she has a serious bone in her body. If she had been playing it campy, then
is campy, and that's why I love
it. But that's the thing. I don't think she was taking it campy. It kind of reminds me of, like, you know, going back to Starship Troopers. Neil Patrick Harris knew exactly what movie he was in, and he was in the same position. He was a former child star in a... Paul Verhoeven movie that looked ridiculous but allegedly was subversive, and he got it bang on. He knew exactly what he was doing. I don't think she had any clue.
I don't think she realized, and also it's kind of sad when you think about it because it kind of did kill her career.
Yeah.
She did some stuff on CSI, and that's pretty much the most notable thing she's done since then.
Yeah. A lot
but
of
it's
the...
sad because but I think she sort of... it's weird because it's one of those movies I've seen it so many times. It's so terrible. I watch it when I'm bored. It's just one of those like over the top ridiculous movies. But I found out my friend hadn't seen it in her whole life, and she was like, "I just want to watch something trashy and terrible."
Well,
and I was like, "Put on Showgirls." Like, obviously,
yeah.
I've heard there's a Showgirls too.
I imagine there is.
I have not seen it,
I don't
but
know.
I read
like,
a review of it.
I'm wrestling with seeing the original. You're not going to get me to see the
original. So you don't know what it's about.
I know vaguely what it's about.
So it's like this, she's a stripper.
Yeah, I can
she
remember.
Does not have a heart of gold, though. That's
no.
The thing.
I can remember the first 30 minutes. After that, I get really
she wants
puzzled.
To be a showgirl in Vegas.
You know, I know that she. I know that they say, like, you're nothing but a stripper, and the comeback is, I'm a dancer. Because we threw that one around in high school a lot.
She...
Like, I did. Like, you know.
She basically, anytime anyone accuses her of being a stripper, which she clearly is, and then even when she becomes a showgirl,
yeah.
she's dancing topless and naked and doing all this kind of sexual things.
Yeah.
She goes, I'm a dancer. She really takes herself so, just like the movie, the character takes herself so seriously.
All I can think of is Friday, I might just get screaming drunk and finally just take
No, it's better if you're drunk when you see it.
But that's not saying much for it.
It's got, it's
we'll
interesting.
See.
Anyways, yeah, the second question I had for you was a movie that you've seen more than 10 times.
Once upon a time, there were many. And there still are. Not as many. As time goes on, because I find myself gravitating more and more towards watching new stuff, I don't rewatch as much as I used to, which makes no sense considering how many of them I own.
For those of you who don't know,
I have a great many.
Ryan's DVD collection at his house is
it pays rent.
Awe-inspiring.
Really.
It's beautiful. You have this urge to like take it.
I will lose 20 minutes just deciding what I want to watch.
It needs its own Dewey Decimal System.
Really, it does. but it all started with, you know, 24 videotapes when I was like 13 or so. In those movies, I quote you chapter and verse like Days of Thunder because I watched them so many times.
Right.
One of them was easily my first R-rated movie. Probably the first movie I shouldn't have been watching when I did. And that's The Terminator. 1984, first Terminator 1. You haven't seen it?
I haven't.
Okay.
This is my blind spot. One of my blind spots is The Terminator.
I'll be curious.
I've seen parts of it, obviously.
Okay.
I've seen
it.
It's kind of like your Showgirls. I've seen like chunks of it,
well,
but I've never watched
it
all
point,
the way through.
At this point, it's kind of iconic. Like, everybody knows the,
know
the basic
scenes.
Framework.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who's doing what.
Come with me if you want to live.
All of that. Well, and that's the thing. Like, so I'm not even talking about Terminator 2, which I have seen more than 10 times as well. But the first one,
Terminator.
The first Terminator 1984, I would have first come to that one when I was like 8 or 9, seeing it on TV. So it was toned down.
Mm-hmm.
The violence and the sex was toned down.
So it was like the TBS version.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, a little bit better than that, because the cool thing about living in Canada is that broadcasters can show stuff that American broadcasters cannot.
Right. So if you're watching it on like CBC or CTV or
So I got a little bit of naughty language and I got a little bit of violence and a little bit of sex, but not quite as far as they would have gone if I had seen it after 11 o'clock.
Right.
But I wouldn't have seen it after 11 o'clock because I was like 10. and you know, so I've seen that over and over through the years. Some of the effects in it are still awesome. Some of the effects in it are showing their age. The story itself is incredible to this day. Like the very complicated nature of there's going to be this gigantic war that's going to wipe out humanity, and when one side finds that they're just about ready to lose the war, they decide, let's go back in time and take out the... Like, there's this weird, like, you know, weird little paradoxical loop that it decides to do that... You know, depending on your physics of how time travel works,
mm-hmm.
may or may not affect it. It's fantastic. Like, James Cameron, who usually can't write himself out of a paper bag, came up with this idea, and it's fan-freaking-tastic. Everybody in it is awesome, from Michael Biehn, who's not nearly as big a star as he should be, Arnold Schwarzenegger doing his normal Arnold thing, Linda Hamilton, who's not quite who she'll go on to be. She's still very soft in this movie. It's
right.
An awesome film, and I've seen
well,
it
now
so
I really
want
to see it.
Yeah, I think it was also one of my first experiences with nudity on film.
Okay.
You know?
You always remember the first one.
Guys do. I can't speak for women, but I know that guys do, because you certainly remember the first time you saw boobs on film. I imagine that's changing now.
It's different for girls.
It's different for girls, first of all, because you know, we've had conversations before about like what girls look for in a guy, you know, physically. You know, we've had strange conversations about the very nature of dick pics. Hi, Mom.
And why they happen.
But like, it's, you know, you might see a guy's butt on TV.
Yes.
And so for starters.
Well, nowadays it's common, especially
well,
with
not
HBO.
Well, but nowadays you're not looking for that kind of thing on TV. That's where I'm showing my age.
Speak for yourself. I want to see Daryl Dixon's butt so badly.
But when I was a kid, that was where you would see something kind of naughty was on TV.
Yes.
At a certain hour on a certain channel, right?
Your parents weren't watching you, and yeah.
Yeah, or the parents,
were watching you, and
they just didn't know what was coming.
Mom would let me watch the most inappropriate movies. My dad was the cover your eyes.
Gotcha.
And my mom would be like, let's watch this documentary about abortion in the 1900s.
Awesome.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, but so that's why I remember it, is because when I was younger, that was my experience with sex and nudity, was on TV in movies. And this was one, because there's a sex scene between Linda Hamilton and Michael Biehn. It's not even all that long. It's certainly not that explicit. You see her boobs. I think you see her butt, too. But it was just, I was 10.
Right.
I was 10 or 12, and I was like, what? I was zillions of emotions.
And your brain's just like, wah!
Yeah, melting in my head. Yeah, so I've seen The Terminator many, many times, and I love it every time.
There's a lot of them, but the one that I always remember is Titanic. Because we got it, my brothers and I, got it on VHS. When it came out on VHS, I think it was an Easter gift.
Okay.
Because that was a big movie, and that was the first movie where I remember being really interested in how movies were made.
Okay.
Because they had that featurette at the end about how James Cameron created.
Right.
It's weird that we're both talking about James Cameron.
Hey, listen, you know what? People like to smack Cameron around. The guy knows how to make a movie that people are going to go see.
He makes iconic films.
And see repeatedly.
Yeah, they're movies that stand up to time.
Yep.
Much like Spielberg, I would say. That they're kind of, for me, they know how to make a blockbuster.
Even more so. Because Spielberg will do his smart stuff that drops and nobody wants to see it. And I'm thinking about stuff, like, great stuff. Like Munich, for instance.
I haven't actually seen it.
Which, it's a fabulous movie. Nobody saw it.
Well, yeah. But the term blockbuster was coined because of Spielberg.
Right.
But
Cameron pops his head out of the gopher hole once every 10 years or so now.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, it was like every 5 or 6 years. Now it's down to like every 10.
Yeah.
Makes something big, drops it in our laps. Everybody goes see it and talks about it for about a year.
Collects his Oscars
and then runs
off into the distance
yes.
to go and swim in his pool full of money.
Yeah.
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 But you know what? I think people like to cut him down because he's so successful. But the Titanic thing... that was like, right, it was the height of Leonardo DiCaprio being the cutest boy ever.
Yeah.
And it was, I was probably, oh gosh, I don't know how old I was. I was probably about 10 or 11.
Okay.
My brothers probably would have been 8.
Mm-hmm.
So I have twin brothers, for those of you who don't know. They're both 8. So we got this on VHS. We didn't have a huge collection of movies at home. So we had our Disney movies, but by then we had grown out of them. So our parents had started buying us these more grown-up movies. So along with Space Jam, Titanic was oddly the movie that we always watched. And actually, that's the first time that I personally can remember seeing boobs on screen, too, was Kate Winslet's boobs, which are very nice.
Yes, they are.
My brothers were probably watching it largely for that portion. However... we really did love to watch like this. It was a big deal when it came out because
mm-hmm.
it was huge. I was also in a weird phase where I really loved Celine Dion.
Okay.
So I listened to that soundtrack over and over again, too.
Everybody did. And
my
if
brothers
they say
and
that
I,
they didn't, they're lying.
They're lying.
Yes.
But so what happened was we would just literally, it was two VHS tapes because it was so long, it couldn't even be held on one.
Yep.
And we would watch them again and again and again and again and again. My brothers... might not want to admit this as much anymore, but they really loved Titanic. They loved Titanic, and it was like this big sprawling romance.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with it because it's a great story. It's really well-told story, and it's kind of interesting because we all know how it ends.
you knew that the ship was
going to sink, but it still was breathtaking in terms of... there's a one shot that I remember... that I had never seen anything like it before, and it's when the boat starts to tip enough where people start falling down the deck and they're sliding,
mm-hmm.
and at that point, that was when really almost 100% visual effects took over.
Yeah.
And nowadays, that kind of visual effects is really just, in any kind of movie,
yeah.
you can see it anywhere. But back then, that was like, holy crap, how did they do that? Kind of looked really real to us.
Yeah.
Even there's like one point where the guy's leg hits the propeller and he flings
and
off.
Yeah.
That's all digital. I mean, we were shocked by the magnitude of it. So I remember that one. I've seen Titanic a lot. I have on DVD, I think, now. but that's the one that I remember too.
Yeah.
Just, I had such a crush on Leonardo DiCaprio. I still do.
Well,
he's
in a different mode now, right? Like back then he was the pretty boy, and he was the one
mm-hmm.
who people my age were saying like, okay, yeah, we know he's good, but is this what he's gonna be? Is he gonna be like, he was kind of a different version of what is now Justin Bieber. It really seems strange.
Yeah, he was that little heartthrob. No, I remember.
Because like, he was the guy going around with an entourage. He was the guy who was, you know, more in the news for his extracurricular activities than for what he was working on. He was like, there was a little bit of a gap in between movies for him too. Like he had Titanic, Iron Mask, and Celebrity all in one little cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went away for like 2 or 3 years.
He does that now too.
Not as much.
Not
the
as
fact
much.
That like, he comes up back up once every year or two.
Yeah, here.
But at the time, like, it was
was
a huge gap. And it was like, what is he going to be doing next? For a while, they thought he was going to be doing American Psycho. For a while, they thought he was going to be doing All the Pretty Horses. For a while,
mm-hmm.
they thought he was going to be doing Talented Mr. Ripley, and then he came back and he did The Beach, of all movies, and then that didn't hit nearly as big.
Yeah.
Even though I think that it's an underrated movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, and then that kind of led into the second act of his career and all the stuff that he did with Scorsese and all that.
Totally. He's one of those actors that I feel like I grew up with, that I think a lot of people feel, who were, you know, millennials or
uh-huh.
or even Generation X too, that you kind of grew up with them, because I remember my walls had three people on them plastered.
Right.
Was Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling.
Okay.
Who I had a major crush on. And Hayden Christensen, because
oh.
he was at the height of popularity. He had done Life is a House.
Okay.
And then I loved Life is a House. And then he was going in to do
Star Wars. Yeah.
And so everybody was talking about Hayden Christensen. Hayden Christensen now is just doing like commercials for RW and Co. But Ryan Gosling and Leonardo DiCaprio kind of really grew up to be these like incredibly, you know, magnificent actors who do this great work. And it's kind of nice to know, like, oh, I had his picture on my wall when I was a kid, and now, you know, he's not just the guy from The Notebook anymore. He's Ryan Gosling. He's a great, great actor.
It's,
and so is Leonardo DiCaprio.
It, like, to me, seeing what actors can do as they age, both male and female,
mm-hmm.
it, like, I always look at it as in comparison to the Beatles. Because when the Beatles began, every grown-up just looked at them and thought, you're another British pop group who look
mm-hmm.
cute.
Yeah.
Right? And the way that they were able to take control of their art and do something different and carve themselves into a groove and do something lasting was what made them stand out, was what made them not, you know, hermits or the Monkees, or even as, you know, as much as we love those, they didn't have the influence that the Beatles had.
Exactly.
Not to say that, you know, DiCaprio is like an acting version of the Beatles, but it's after you get that pretty breakout,
mm-hmm.
how do you keep a grip on it?
Totally.
How do you evolve to the next step of your career? It's what we just saw Matthew McConaughey do.
Anyways, we're off topic, but that's...
I'm actually thinking you could turn this into two shows. Like,
it
I'm
could
dead
be.
One show
we're
where we're
wrong.
Just rapping and one show where we talk about The Hunt.
It's true. We still haven't even talked about The Hunt. But I still have one more question for you. We'll keep it pretty short, but what TV...
Oh, yeah, good luck
with
that.
What TV show are you obsessed with right now?
The TV show I'm obsessed with, it's been most of the last year, and it's just basically, it's because I was really late to the party, and when I came across it, I loved it so, so much. And it's finishing its fifth season right now. I'm deeply obsessed with Archer.
Yeah, see, I've watched episodes of Archer. I never watched it all the way through.
Okay.
But I have seen like a good chunk of episodes.
Okay, and you're saying it as if it does nothing for you.
It does.
But.
I think it's really funny.
Yeah.
It's really, really funny.
But.
I haven't had the opportunity to get really
oh,
deep into it.
Okay.
But it's on my list. Already.
Okay. I know at least the first three seasons, I think actually maybe all four seasons are on Netflix right now. So you could kill off, and okay, it's, you know, anytime you get into a show that's broadcast half hour, which means that when you watch it later on video, whether it's Netflix or DVD or whatever, that it turns into 20 minutes, you can lose a ton of time doing
yes.
that. I lost...
Binge watching.
I believe I lost all of Canada Day last year watching season one of Archer. I just tore the hell through it.
Yeah.
It's... So for those who might not know, it's an animated comedy about a spy agency known as ISIS. And it exists in this weird little vacuum that is at once our time. That sounds like a train going by.
I think it's a fire engine train.
Oh, that's
police.
Yeah, that's
it's
what
like
it
a combination of all the most annoying city
sounds at once.
All at once, which you can only get if you live in Parkdale.
Yeah.
Oh, look, now there's some sirens.
Wonderful.
Somebody got shot or something. Who knows
yeah.
what happened?
critical Mass cast goes through this all the time because Corey Pierce used to live down here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so you, in their back episodes, you hear all sorts of Parkdale sounds.
As long as there's no gunshots, we're safe,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, no kidding. Archer at once takes place in our time and place and also the late 60s. So you'll see them using reel-to-reel quite a bit, but you'll also see them using, like, iPhones. And it's all set in a spy agency. The main agent, like the James Bond of the agency, Sterling Archer, is voiced by, is it H. John Benjamin, who's the main voice on Bob's Burgers? Which is really, really weird. If you're used to that voice coming out of Bob from Bob's Burgers...
Yeah, it's H. John Benjamin.
It is H. John, yeah. So
he also voices that convenience store guy on Family Guy.
That's right,
yeah.
So if you're used to that voice coming out of somebody who looks like Bob, and then you see him coming out of somebody who looks like Sterling Archer, it'll throw you a little bit.
But he's very dry and sarcastic and kind of, he's just kind of a
well,
he's like
no,
a, he's kind of like a combination to me of like Barney Stinson and I don't even know.
But on this thing, on Archer, he's let more off the chain. He's a big kid. On Archer, like he's a guy who he'll let a woohoo really often,
yeah.
really always he'll yell.
No, it's very funny
yeah.
and inappropriate and
yeah.
smart and the actually I like the style. The animation is kind of a comic book style too. That
yes,
I,
it's
really
it's
enjoy.
Very rotoscoped is what
yeah.
it is. Like they look they've got that kind of look to them. Judy Greer is another voice. Chris
Aisha
Parnell.
Tyler.
Aisha Tyler is really funny on the show. So is Jessica Walter. She plays Sterling's mom.
Yes.
And at least once every episode or every two or three episodes, a guest voice will show up. So it's always really, really cool. It is wildly inappropriate. It, like there's a lot of sex humor on this movie.
It's a cartoon that is not for children. It's
no,
not.
No.
And I'm not talking like Simpsons inappropriate. Like it's,
yeah.
It's
yeah,
I've
like,
seen
like,
a few episodes. It's very
yeah. Like nobody gets like full on naked in the show, but there are
yes.
there's a lot of sex jokes that get thrown around. The girls will always toss around the term sploosh when they're talking about a guy. Yeah, see? Yeah, yeah.
Oh
see?
Man,
see, right. yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, oh yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that I've heard the slip and slide.
Yes.
That's one I've heard before.
Yeah. So, now, the crazy thing about Archer, though, is that, so, it's five seasons, like, it's in its fifth season now, and for four seasons, it's been this spy show, and this season, without real any reason otherwise, other than they wanted to do something different, they decided to shut down ISIS. They decided to shut down the agency under the brilliant masterstroke of, it was never a legitimate agency.
Okay.
And Aisha Tyler... Her character's name is Lana, and she's like the character design on her is just smoking.
Yeah,
she's fantastic.
She's no, if Aisha Tyler is a hot woman.
Yes, and they,
she's definitely just up the ante.
Yes,
like even more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She when the shit comes down and ISIS gets discovered to be illegitimate, she turns to the Jessica Walter character, the mother, Mrs. Archer, Mallory Archer, and she says, I've asked you a million times. So, you know, so what they've decided to do with the story now is they shut down ISIS and they all bail out and they're all okay. They've all escaped arrest. But they happen to be sitting on 100 kilos of cocaine. So now it's like, well, what do we do now? Well, let's just sell the cocaine. So now this season, they're a bunch of drug runners. out of nowhere. But of course, they have no idea how to drug run. So they keep losing coke in the Indies. Not to mention the fact that one of them is like now addicted to coke, so she is like eating it.
That's good. That's
good. Yeah, it's a great show.
I have been binge watching, as you saw when you came in, I had it on my TV, Mad Men,
yeah.
Season 6, because I'm trying to catch up and finish up. I'm almost done. I've got like 4 episodes left in Season 6,
mm-hmm.
because the final season of Mad Men is coming April.
April, which I would be 13th. More, I'd be more stoked about it if they hadn't split it in two. Right now I feel like we're getting ready for December 30th. You know, it's not quite New Year's Eve.
I don't know. I feel AMC does that, and I think it's actually, personally, I totally respect them for doing it. And the reason they do it, and this is why I could go on and on about AMC, and I won't, but AMC does a quality over quantity, in my opinion. And, like, for instance, Breaking Bad, they broke up their final season as well. Breaking Bad also ended before it needed, really. They could have kept going with Breaking Bad, but the writer said, well, the story's over.
Yeah.
That's the thing that a lot of shows, namely, let's, off the top of my head, How I Met Your Mother needed to end 2 seasons ago.
Sure.
They
Or it needed to do something different.
There's an indulgence that comes with success of television shows that they want to get as many people to watch it, as many episodes as possible, as soon as possible. Whereas AMC likes to make you wait for it, and the quality, the reason why I love Mad Men so much, a lot of people who haven't seen it don't understand its appeal, because
mm-hmm.
they're like, well, isn't it just an office? Like, what's the big deal?
Right.
Aren't they just advertising executives? Like, what's the most, and it's really more about, it's such a deep character study, and it's really, there's so many gears turning it in one scene that I watch episodes over again that I watched a long time ago, and when I watch them again, I think, oh my god, I didn't even notice all of the dynamics that are going on in one particular scene. Shot like a movie.
Yeah.
Just shot like a good movie.
Yeah.
Like, beautifully shot.
There are 5 or 6 personal stories going on. There's the story of the firm itself going on. There's the story of America in the 1960s. And
yes.
just how much change happened in 10 years.
Oh, yeah. And right now, in Season 6, they're right at, like, they're at, like, 1968 or 7, I think. So they're making references to Bonnie and Clyde, which came out in 1967, which was a turning point in cinema.
Did you pass the bit about Rosemary's Baby?
They haven't talked about Rosemary's Baby.
Okay, that's coming
up. But there's the sexual revolution going on. There's the space race going on. There's the Vietnam War. There's the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
There's the women's rights movement. There's all kinds of things going on all at the same time. And this office, this Sterling Cooper Driver Price, this advertising agency, is like a microcosm
of
American life in the
60s.
And John Hamm is going to have a hell of a time finding a better role than that.
Well, he is, but like he's actually kind of like, he's, if anybody out of that cast has got their career from the show, by far right now it's got to be John Hamm, because he was a that guy for a long time. Like, if you watch movies from the early part of the decade, he shows up in a lot.
And now you go, oh, there
he is.
Oh,
John Hamm.
Because you didn't recognize it before.
And the amazing thing about it is he's also really funny. And this is something that is not played up on Mad Men nearly enough.
He's so funny.
But he's a really great goofball. And I think I give credit to that for 30 Rock for really showing that off.
And Bridesmaids. He is...
Well, because that came after.
Yeah, exactly. But he's very funny.
And so I think he'll be just fine. I really hope that more of the cast goes on to other things. You know, Hollywood hasn't really quite figured out what to do with Christina Hendricks just yet.
Although she was
Elizabeth Moss is sort of getting there.
Yeah.
I don't think that anybody's ever going to be able to figure out what to do with January Jones other than play her as a Barbie doll.
I cannot stand her. I can't stand her.
Oddly enough, Roger Slattery already had an amazing career.
John Slattery. Yeah.
Sorry. Already had a huge career as that guy. He showed up in a ton of stuff.
He has a great turn in Sex and the City.
Yes.
Politician. Anyone
who
knows Sex and the City knows John's and he's got that Silver Fox thing going that everybody.
So the actors will be okay. I don't know what will fill this void when it's done.
That's what I was thinking yesterday. I was thinking, you know, it's such a specific type of show.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing I can talk about AMC forever. they make shows that are unique and that are difficult, in my opinion, to ever replicate the type of show that that is, and the type of television that it is.
I think that that really speaks to a good television show, period. Like, I think that anytime you get a good show made, there will inevitably, the next season or the season after that, be shows that try to jump on that. So,
yeah.
With, for instance, with Mad Men, after that we saw The Playboy Club,
yeah,
came out for a while.
Pan Am. I personally was devastated when Pan Am was canceled.
Neither one of them caught on, because it's not just people want to watch a show about the 60s, or people want to watch a show about a meth cook.
Yeah.
They are interested in these people and this story.
Exactly.
So find another story and other people.
Think about The Walking Dead, which is personally my favorite television show. The Walking Dead is zombies. And zombies is possibly one of the most overplayed genres, next to maybe vampires, in sort of the horror / supernatural genre. But Walking Dead, because AMC allows, they appreciate writers, and they appreciate the creative process, and they appreciate that there's more to a show than just its hook, that they really make a show that is so much more. That's why
whenever I tell people
to watch it, like, I got my mom to watch The Walking Dead, not a horror movie person. I told her to watch it. Kept telling her over and over again. She goes, I don't like horror. I don't like zombies. I said, it's not about the zombies.
Yeah.
It's about what do you do when you're faced with the end of times? What do you do when you're faced with inevitable demise?
Yeah.
Because everybody in the world is going to die.
Yep.
But we don't think about it. Unless you have some kind of mental problem. You probably shouldn't be thinking about dying every single day.
Yeah.
But in their world, it's in their face constantly, nonstop, is their mortality. And it changes who they are as people.
Well, one of the things I love about that show is it's 4 seasons in now, and about halfway through that, around season 2 or into the early part of season 3, it reached a point where walkers, which is their term for zombies, became so much a part of the landscape that the cast of characters doesn't react anymore. Like, they'll be having a conversation, and you'll see way down the road there's a walker on its way. And they look and they see him.
Yeah.
And they don't care, because it's like, yeah, there's a walker over there, he's fine. You know,
yeah.
We see him, we're well ahead of him, it's okay. They're always drifting around. They're like squirrels.
Yeah.
In a lesser show, the appearance of a walker would be immediate alarm. And sometimes it is, if it's in close quarters. But that's the thing. The Walking Dead is the people who are left.
Yeah, the title of the show is actually, in the comic book and the video game that all go along with it, the Walking Dead are the people, because they are alive, but really it's only a matter of time until they're dead.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, and the interesting thing about The Walking Dead, before I change topics completely, is that even though it's in season 4, they've only made it to about issue 50 in the comic books.
Yeah, you and I have had conversations about this before. At this point, like, as well as they're doing now,
they have so much more material to draw from.
But they also need to think about how they're going to get out.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, because you told me you haven't read the comics.
I read book 1,
okay.
And then I stopped because I wanted to watch it as a show. And what made me flinch when you told it to me was that it hadn't ended its run, and that to me is inexcusible.
I think
they're
laying the groundwork.
Too late.
No. They're laying the groundwork for it to conclude very soon.
Too late.
No, I don't think it is. That you'll see with. I have a lot of confidence after watching, after they came back with the second half of season 4 that's just started.
Oh, sorry, are we talking about the show that they're laying the groundwork for it to close? Or the books?
No, the comic book, I'm talking about the show.
Okay.
The show.
Oh, the show.
Like,
oh, no, the show, they've still
the
got
show,
the, yeah, the show they've
the
still got a few seasons that they can.
Maybe 2.
I'll give it 3.
I would be surprised if it made it past season 7.
But 7's fine for me.
I think 6 or 7 will be done, but that's because I know what they're doing in terms of these last couple episodes, they've laid down a storyline that's going to play itself out that inevitably will end the series, which will heartbreak people. But I can see it. I can see where they're going.
Yeah.
Even though I know they don't follow the comic book directly,
yeah,
I can see that they're setting themselves up to have a way to conclude it well.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. But the other thing that's great about it is that for people who love The Walking Dead, read the comic book, because it's just...
I disagree, but okay.
And read the comic book. It's different, but the same.
Yeah.
Definitely a video game you want to play is the Telltale Games version of The Walking Dead, which is done in a comic book style with
different characters, completely.
Yeah,
and I've heard with that one that you can lose hours.
I have it.
Or lost days.
It is the kind of storytelling that you expect from Robert Kirkman, because
okay.
it's Robert Kirkman who wrote it.
Gotcha.
But he got to write about completely new characters.
Okay.
Clementine is this little girl who's left behind
yeah.
by her parents and just hides in her treehouse and manages to survive the apocalypse, and you have to play as her and this man who finds her and takes care of her.
Hmm.
And the way the story evolves, you will see familiar characters, like Glenn makes a brief appearance and you
okay.
go, there's Glenn! Ah. And it fills in little blanks about, like, where was Glenn before he met up
oh,
with,
okay, okay.
with people from the Winnebago group,
yeah.
right?
It's a show like this that actually lends itself to other platforms. Like,
there are an endless number of stories.
You might be able to get it with Archer, just because Archer has action involved.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a cool thing about the age we live in, that you can take a story and spread it out into other...
As a writer, I'm kind of jealous of that. You can almost, like, Robert Kirkman has found this one idea that he can just keep telling. It's almost like Harry Potter too, where J.K. Rowling has said she can technically keep writing Harry Potter stories that don't even involve Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's
like
the world
or Lord of the
build.
Rings.
Yeah,
you know that he's done that sort of once in a lifetime thing of creating a world that is
yeah.
so
rich
that you can take it a million different ways and still have endless pools
yeah.
of inspiration.
Hi guys, thanks so much for listening to my first ever episode of Kate Has a Podcast. Ryan and I, as usual, had quite a lot to talk about, so we decided to split this episode into two parts. The second part will be available next week for you, but until then, I hope you enjoyed listening, and we'll see you soon. Bye!